The following is a Sunday feast lecture given by His Holiness Jaya Bhattaka Swami on October 30th, 1988 in Atlanta, Georgia. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 12, Text 8.
Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 12, Text 8, the Huganatan verses of Jalabhar. This is a lesson from the ancient history of India, the great Bhagavat Mahapurana. This is a history about the great emperor, King Bharat, who became the ruler of the entire world, the ruler of the civilized world. And he retired, abdicating his throne to his son. He left for the forest and he became engaged in the practice of yoga, meditation and chanting mantras. Through this process he developed great spiritual learning, realization, but somehow he took a pet deer into the ashram. Well, actually what happened was the mother was drinking water when she was pregnant at the side of the river where he was meditating. There was suddenly a lightning bolt which startled the deer, who jumped across the stream and landed on the other side, causing a miscarriage. And the mother died, the mother deer. So the retired king, seeing the helpless little deer, thought, let me take care of it, it's no mother, fed it some milk and some food, and this way kept it alive. But the deer became very affectionate to King Bharat, not knowing anyone else. It took him just like the mother, father, everything. And to make a long story short, after many years, the deer just stayed there like a pet, and was come and sometime wake the king up in the morning when he was sleeping by licking on his face. Very affectionate. So when the retired king was leaving his body, he would start to meditate. Well, at that time the deer came and was, could see he was about to die, so the deer was smelling his face and he was there. So I was leaving his body and the deer was looking right there, smelling his face. He thought, what's going to happen to the deer? And he left his body. Well, according to the Bhagavad Gita, we have a Bhagavad Gita this one? There's a law of karma explained in the Veda. And according to the law of karma, whatever we do, there's a reaction. There's another aspect of the law of karma, which is that whatever we think about when we leave our body, we achieve that destination in our next birth. This is explained in chapter 8, verse 6. Yang yang vapi smaram bhavam tyajalam te kalevaram tam tame vaiti kunteya sadatad bhava bhavitaha. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. End of translation. Report. The process of changing one's nature at the critical moment of death is here explained. A person who at the end of his life quits his body thinking of Krishna attains the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. But it is not true that a person who thinks of something other than Krishna attains the same transcendental state. This is a point we should note very carefully. How can one die in the proper state of mind? Maharaj Bharat, although a great personality, thought of a deer at the end of his life. So this is the secret revealed. And so in his next life, he was transferred into the body of a deer. Although as a deer, he remembered his past activities. He had to accept that animal body. Because when he was left his body, he thought of a deer. He took birth in a deer body. But he didn't lose his human intelligence, his memory, while he was a deer, because he had practiced the yoga process. Although as a deer, he remembered his past activities. He had to accept that animal body. Of course, one's thoughts during the course of one's life accumulate to influence one's thoughts at the moment of death. So this life creates one's next life. If one's present life, one lives in the mode of goodness and always thinks of Krishna, it is possible for one to remember Krishna at the end of one's life. That will help one to be transferred to the transcendental nature of Krishna. If one is transcendentally absorbed in Krishna's service, then his next body will be transcendental, spiritual, not material. Therefore, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is the best process for successfully changing one's state of being at the end of one's life. Hare Krishna. So, after leading a life as a deer, where he would go to the holy places and get the food remnants of the prasad, a sacred food, then when he died, the next birth he took as a son of a priest, as a brahmana, who had some landed property as well. But he was so afraid that after giving up the entire world as an emperor, I just by a little carelessness I became a deer. He became so afraid that he thought, let me be very careful. Let me not make any mistake, so that I can really go back to God at the end of this lifetime and not get stuck again in the law of the incarnation. So he could remember his previous two births, which is very rare. We normally don't remember our previous births, but he could because of his unique situation after having practiced so much bhakti yoga. Then he wouldn't play with the other children. He wouldn't talk with anyone. He would just sit and meditate and do. So the parents thought that we have some kind of a strange child, like maybe a little retarded or something. And they didn't know what to do with him. So they asked him to stand out in the cornfield and scare away the crows, like a living scarecrow. So he would sit out there, and when the crows come, he'd scare them away. That would be what he'd do. So there's a long history. I mean, he was determined that whatever happens, I'm not going to forget Krishna. And so he just kept it very simple. One time he was kidnapped by some dacoits. Dacoits mean, in English, you know, dacoits?
Bandits.
No, but all the Indians are said. But do Americans understand dacoit? That's not a word that's used. Okay, they were outlaws, bandits. But they are special, like a professional, like a gang.
Murderers.
Like a
gang.
Gangsters. But they're like a special armed bandit type of situation. So they kidnapped him, and they thought, they saw that here's this he was very healthy, you see. He was very well-built, healthy, but he just sat there and scared crows. He just chanted Hare Krishna to himself and didn't talk to anyone. Because he was so frightened of just getting entangled in some kind of worldly activity at that point that he didn't get involved. So they kidnapped him. I don't know if he chanted Hare Krishna or another mantra, actually, but he was chanting some mantra connected with Krishna and Vishnu. So then, when they kidnapped him, they thought that we'll offer him as a human sacrifice to the goddess Bhadrakali. And this way, we can get a blessing for doing better robberies in the future. So they said they gave him to the head priest and said, please offer him a... We found this kind of a imbecile person, so it doesn't matter if he's killed like a man-animal. According to the... Apparently, whatever kind of black rites they did was supposed to be kind of a man-animal. Someone very retarded. So they thought this is what he was. But he thought, well, whatever happens, I'm just going to think of Krishna. And this time when I leave my body, I'm not going to think of deers or anything else. I'm just going to think of Krishna. So he didn't make any protests. They bathed him up, put him in his white cloth. He was just sitting there waiting, you know. All right, whenever it comes, I'm ready. This time I'm thinking of you, Krishna. But then when the priest came out to sacrifice him up, lifted up the big chopper, then this big deity of Kali came to life and, or she like broke, actually the goddess Kali broke out of the deity along with her associate, and she came with her chopper and just chopped the head off her pujari and killed all of the bandits because they were going to kill this actually liberated soul who was always meditating on God. And then she disappeared. So Jarabhat looked around and saw the whole situation. Went back to the field where the crows were. And the parents came, where were you? The crows are eating the corn. He didn't make any protest. You can't do anything right. Why did God give us such a foolish child? Don't wander off. So then he was sitting there on the side of the cornfield the next day. After some days, again, one king came by, carried by four porters on a palanquin. And as he was going by, one of his porters, by the will of Providence, stepped on a stone or a thorn or something and started to limp. And the king said, what's going on here? Hold it, hold it. And so then he said, I'm sorry, I stepped on a thorn, I can't walk. He saw, there's a nice healthy guy sitting in the corner. So she, hey you, come over here. So Jarabhat, he was very amiable person. He came over and he said, listen, you carry this palanquin. My bear's foot is hurt. So he grabbed the palanquin. And he's like, get going, everyone move. So as he's walking, Jarabhat saw there's so many ants on the path. So if I step on an ant, I'll get some bad karma. So he tried to miss the ant. But the others one, I just went left, right, he's done. Moving, trying to miss the ant. So the palanquin was like, moving up and down. So then, in this way, the king started to criticize. He said, the king Rahugana told Jarabhat, how troublesome this is. My dear brother, you certainly appear very fatigued because you have carried this palanquin alone without assistance for a long time and for a long distance. Besides that, due to your old age, you have become greatly troubled. My dear friend, I see that you are not very firm, not very stout and strong. How are your fellow carriers cooperating with you? In this way, the king criticized Jarabhat with sarcastic words. Yet despite being criticized in this way, Jarabhat had no bodily conception of the situation. He knew that he was not the body, for he had attained his spiritual identity. He was neither fat, lean, nor thin, nor had anything to do with a lump of matter, a combination of the five gross and three subtle elements. He had nothing to do with the material body and its two hands and legs. In other words, he had completely realized his spiritual identity, Aham Brahmasmi. He was therefore unaffected by this sarcastic criticism from the king. Without saying anything, he continued carrying the palanquin as before. Jarabhat was completely liberated. He didn't even care that the dacoits, the bandits, are trying to kill him. He didn't care anything. Because he knew that I'm eternal, and I'm not this body. So he simply kept his mind on the absolute truth. Basically, the philosophy or the reality of our existence, as explained in this verse, is that we're not the body, but we're the spirit soul within the body. This body is made of five gross elements, according to the Veda, the Vedic literature, with also the subtle mind, intelligence, and false ego, these three subtle elements. So this combination of gross and subtle body is the covering for the living force, or the spirit soul. So Jara Bharat had realized that he was the spirit soul, that he was actually the spiritual force within the body, and that the body was something changeable and temporary. Like we can change our clothes, we can change our body. But we are actually the person that makes the body alive. Once the person leaves the body, the soul leaves the body is dead. There's no life. Death is nothing to fear. But we never die, actually. It's simply that we have to leave this body and then we have to take a new birth. So the question is, what will be the next birth? There's no question that one time we're going to have to leave the body, sooner or later. Maybe when we're 80 or 90 or 100, maybe when, at any moment. There's no guarantee how long or when. So he'd already reached the state of realization after remembering three births, going through everything, he could realize, I'm not this body. So he didn't care that the king was calling him all kinds of sarcastic names. So then the king got really angry. Because after, he's writing, even after giving those sarcastic remarks, the palanquin is still moving, you know, because Jarabhar is still looking not to step on any ants. He knows he's not the body, but he doesn't want to be responsible for any animal's death, and then he'll have to take that karma and remain more in kingdom. So he's still trying to miss the ants, and by jumping this way and that way, the whole palanquin is just moving, and the king became very angry. He said, "You rascal, what are you doing? Are you dead despite the life within your body? Do you not know I'm your master? Are you disregarding me? And are you not carrying out my order? For this disobedience I shall now punish you just as Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, punishes sinful people. I shall give you proper treatment so that you will come to your senses and do the correct thing." In other words, the king said, "I just got some slave here, picked him up off the street, and I'm telling him not to rock my palanquin, and he doesn't listen. Why am I going to teach this slave, this peasant, to disobey my order?" Like this, he became so passionate. So he became so angry, and he started to criticize Jarabharat, who was actually a topmost liberated soul. So then Jarabharat spoke to the king. "My dear king and hero, whatever you have spoken sarcastically is certainly true. Actually, these are not simply words of chastisement, for the body is the carrier. The load carried by the body does not belong to me, for I am the spirit soul. There is no contradiction in your statements because I am different from the body. I am not the carrier of the palanquin. The body is the carrier. Certainly, as you have hinted, I have not labored carrying the palanquin, for I am detached from the body. You have said that I am not stout and strong, and these words are befitting a person who does not know the distinction between the body and the soul. The body may be fat or thin, but no learned man would say such things of the spirit soul. As far as the spirit soul is concerned, I am neither fat nor skinny. Therefore you are correct when you say that I am not very stout. Also, if the object of this journey and the path leading there were mine, there would be many problems or troubles for me, but because they relate not to me but to my body, there is no trouble at all. Fatness, thinness, bodily and mental distress, thirst, hunger, fear, disagreement, desires for material happiness, old age, sleep, attachment for material possessions, anger, lamentation, illusion, and identification of the body with the self are all transformations of the material covering of the spirit soul. A person absorbed in the material bodily conception is affected by these things. But I am free from all bodily conceptions. Consequently, I am neither fat nor skinny, nor anything else you have mentioned. My dear king, you have unnecessarily accused me of being dead and although alive. In this regard, I can only say that this is the case everywhere, because everything material has its beginning and end. As far as you're thinking that you are the king and master, and are thus trying to order me, this is also incorrect, because these positions are temporary. Today you are a king and I am your servant, but tomorrow the position may be changed, and you may be my servant and I your master. These are temporary circumstances created by Providence. My dear king, if you still think that you are the king and that I am his servant, you should order me, and I should follow your order. I can then say that this differentiation is temporary and expands only from usage or convention. I do not see any other cause. In that case, who is the master and who is the servant? Everyone is being forced by the laws of material nature. Therefore, no one is master and no one is servant. Nonetheless, if you think that you are the master and that I am the servant, I shall accept this. Please order me. What can I do for you? My dear king, you have said, you rascal, you dull, crazy fellow. I am going to chastise you, and then you will come to your senses. In this regard, let me say that although I live like a dull, deaf, and dumb man, I am actually a self-realized person. What will you gain by punishing me? If your calculation is true and I am a madman, then your punishment will be like beating a dead horse. There'll be no effect. When a madman is punished, he is not cured of his madness. So when he heard the king, you know, he's thinking this is just some stupid guy carrying my calling for him. Then all of a sudden he said these very philosophical, very profound words. The king became like, who is that? He became very surprised. And then the king, when he heard this presentation, immediately the material conception of the king was destroyed. He jumped off his palanquin. He said, let it down, let me down. And he got off his palanquin and he fell flat on the ground with his head on the ground touching the feet of Jarabharat, that he may be excused for his insult against the great Brahmana. And then he prayed to Jarabharat. O Brahmana, you appear to be moving in this world, very much covered and unknown to others. Who are you? Are you a learned Brahmana and a saintly person? I see that you are wearing a sacred thread. Are you one of those exalted, liberated saints such as Dattatreya and other highly advanced learned scholars? May I ask whose disciple you are? Like this, he asked so many questions. He said, I'm afraid of offending a Brahmana. You offend a saintly person. I'm not afraid of thunderbolts. I'm not afraid of explosions, I'm not afraid of any, but I'm afraid of offending a Brahmin. So since I've offended you and I see you're actually a great learned spiritual person, therefore I request you please to forgive me and instruct me. So in this way they had a long discussion. Very interesting discussion on the difference between matter and spirit, on the duties, on the reality of material positions and material life. And it wouldn't be possible to read the whole discussion. But I thought to read one. Chedakshitam eva characharasya vidamanishtam prabhavam chanityam tam namatunyad gavaharamulam nirukyatam satkriyayamumeyam. Translation. All of us on the surface of the globe are living entities in different forms. Some of us are moving and some are not moving. All of us come into existence, remain for some time, and are annihilated when the body is again mingled with the earth. We are all simply different transformations of the earth. Different bodies and capacities are simply transformations of the earth that exist in name only. For everything grows out of the earth, and when everything is annihilated, it again mingles with the earth. In other words, we are but dust and we shall but be dust. Everyone can consider this point. This was spoken, of course, many, many thousands of years ago. It was written down 5,000 years ago. Jarabharat existed, according to Vedic history, millions of years ago. Or at least about millions of years ago, actually. Or at least many hundreds of thousands of years ago in the ancient Vedic civilization. So, this is a very philosophical discussion they had. It's interesting that many of the more recent religious texts in the world that have come up in the recent history, past couple thousand years, also repeat similar instructions regarding. But the difference here is that Jarabharat is explaining how the body is coming from the earth, and again it's mingling back with the earth. But there's a difference between the body and the spirit. But the spirit never goes back to earth, it never perishes. So we are actually the spirit, we are part of Krishna. This understanding of the material nature is to give a perspective. Naturally, we're living in the material world. For us, the material world is everything. But for great self-realized souls, they can see that the material world is always changing. It's not permanent. And that there's a higher reality. So the two things, the temporary reality has to be balanced with the permanent or eternal reality. If we take the temporary reality to be everything, then it's like a small child who thinks that the little playpen or the little things that the child confronts are everything. Someone takes the candy away, they're crying. Someone gives a candy, they're happy. To be happy or to be crying because we gain or lose something material is also only a more sophisticated child. So Jarabhat, by his instruction to this king, was giving the king a vision to understand, after he'd been through so much, having himself been an emperor, himself gone through all these births, achieved the self-realization, he was able to educate this king to understand the difference between the temporary world and the eternal reality. So then that king, in the end, he accepted Jarabhat as his guru, as his spiritual master. And that time he was a very great king, and he was, by achieving a bona fide spiritual master, he was enlightened completely. Otherwise he was just thinking, I'm a king, my duty is to protect the citizens, and these are all my citizens, my subjects. And they have to do what I say, and I'm protecting them, and they all owe me something. Then he could realize that he had a specific higher relationship, and that his eternal identity wasn't that he was a king, but actually he was the eternal servant of Krishna. He was the eternal spirit soul. And therefore, as a king, he knew his duty was actually to uplift the spiritual consciousness of his people. So when he accepted a bona fide spiritual master, then under the guidance of Jarabhat, the entire world at that time became God conscious. So, this story of Jarabhat and or King Bharat, subsequently Jarabhat in his third birth, is very interesting because it instructs, gives us an idea about reincarnation, about the laws of karma, about the nature of the spirit soul. Sometimes people have a misconception that reincarnation, when you die, you go into someone else's body. That's not how it works. When you leave your present body at the time of death, the spirit soul is very small, like an atomic size. And that goes with the subtle body and enters into the womb of a mother. That's called conception, at the time of conception. What mother it is, what birth, that depends on, as we know now, various factors of karma, of consciousness, of desires. Then they go into the womb just at the time of conception. And because of the presence of that spirit soul, the body grows in the womb as an embryo. So according to the Vedas, life is there from the point of conception. And abortion, therefore, would also be considered the taking of the life after conception. So, in this way, this also gives us an idea what is actually transmigration of the soul. It's really a transmigration continually going on. But also the importance of finding out what is the absolute truth, finding out our real purpose in life. It's essential to have a bona fide spiritual master. Bharat Maharaj, when he first left his kingdom and he began meditating, he was careless by becoming attached to a deer. After giving up so many attachments, he gave up a kingdom, a beautiful wife, a whole empire of very loyal subjects and family members and children. He left them all just so he could concentrate on his self-realization at the latter part of his life. The Vedic custom was that, or tradition, was that when a person gets over 50 years of age, he considers about retiring and using the latter part of his life for self-realization. Instead of going to old folks' homes where they play checkers or cards until they pass away, they would go to some sacred ashram or some sacred place, and they would do some devotional service or some meditation in order to prepare themselves for the next life. So the problem with King Bharat is he didn't consult with his guru, his spiritual master, when he took the pet. Otherwise he would have known that, well, for someone who's renounced so many things, to take a little pet is dangerous, because if you get attached to the pet, it can be an unnecessary attachment. The final stretch of the marathon of life is meant to get completely attached and focused on absolute truth, transcending all relative attachments. Now, in the previous ages, the atmosphere was such you could go in the forest and you could just meditate, and people would respect you, wouldn't disturb you. Nowadays, it's a bit difficult. First of all, it's hard to find any forest, and probably if you do, the game wardens or someone tell you you can't camp there, you don't have a license. And maybe a hunter would come by looking for beer and bears, rather, or something. Might, you know, shoot you or something. But even in the Himalaya mountains, it's difficult to find a secluded cave nowadays, because so many tourist planes are flying overhead looking for the Mount Everest and everything, that the atmosphere right now, maybe in Himalayas there's still a few caves if you go far enough inside them, but generally speaking it's a bit difficult nowadays to find a place you can go and meditate in the forest. And most people, it's not very suitable for them to just give up the city and go in the forest. It's hard for them to survive. Plus the forests are not producing so many fruits and edible food for a human being to be able to survive in that circumstance, in that situation. So therefore it's recommended not to go in the forest. It's actually an advice of the Shastra that in this particular modern age, forget the idea about just going and living off in the forest as being a very practical means of self-realization. It's better to live in a holy place or in association with other spiritual-minded persons in a spiritual community and practice an ashram and practice devotional service or bhakti yoga. This is much more practical. And so that's why the Krishna conscious movement has many ashrams, many communities and farm projects where people can come and can practice their devotional service along with many other like-minded people. Also, of course, this process can be practiced in one's home. But one needs to regularly visit devotees or the spiritual-minded people to get some reinforcement, some good association. Just like all of the people here present, they could be going out and having some Halloween party or so many other things, but they're here tonight to attend the love feast at the Hare Krishna temple and to listen to the lecture from the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita on self-realization. So these ladies are all very spiritual, you're all very spiritual people. You're not the ordinary people, but you're very special people who are spiritual minded. So this coming together of spiritual people is very important. It creates a very positive atmosphere. It's very conducive to our spiritual progress. Confirm. So, but of course one does need to have a spiritual master as a guide, as a shelter. And that's also a special search. This King Rahugana was very fortunate that he got a spiritual master just by accident. I mean, we think, as if by accident. Actually, it was by the will of Providence, by divine dispensation. Somehow he had that good karma to get such a great blessing, or maybe it was just a causeless blessing. So, but doesn't it, there's, generally, one has to look for a spiritual master. One has to seek. I remember there's a history of one great spiritual master in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His name was Srinivas Acharya. Well, he was later became Acharya. Acharya means spiritual master, but he started off as Srinivas, Das, servant. And he got the idea that let me go and find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and learn from him the teachings of the Bhagavat, the devotional teaching of Krishna consciousness. So that time Lord Chaitanya lived in Jagannath Puri, which is on the side of the Bay of Bengal Ocean, or Sea, Bay of Bengal Sea. And he was living north of Navadvip in Bengal, in a city called, well, near Katwa. And it's a good, about 500 miles. So he decided to walk to Jagannath Puri to see Lord Chaitanya and request him to teach him the science of Krishna consciousness. So he walked all the way down to Jagannath Puri, which took quite a bit of time through forests and jungles and over rivers and going through different checkposts and things, because he had to go from one country to another. There were two separate kingdoms. The kingdom of Bengal was under Mohammedan ruler, and the kingdom of Orissa was under a Hindu ruler. So he walked down, and finally he reached Jagannath Puri. And in Jagannath Puri, he saw there was a great gathering of people. Thousands of people were gathered around the temple. And he said, "What's the big festival?" He said, "You don't know?" He said, "No. What's the big festival?" He said, "Lord Chaitanya has just passed away. He's entered into the temple, and the door was closed behind him. He entered into the temple. Jagannath closed the door. When the pujaris opened the door, he was no longer there. He'd entered into the deity. His pastimes are finished." Srinivas, he just walked all the way 500 miles by foot to see Lord Chaitanya. His hope was to see Lord Chaitanya, to get the teachings of the Krishna consciousness, and he became so frustrated, so he became like mad. He said, no, can't be, I don't believe it, no! How can it be? How will I learn the Bhagavatam?" And then he fell on the ground, he was hitting his head on the stone, said, no, you know, he's like, just went mad in separation. His whole life actually was, he was a devotee of Lord Chaitanya, so his lifelong ambition was to see Lord Chaitanya, get to the days after he leaves, or even the same day. So he fell unconscious in his grief, his misery. And Lord Chaitanya, he thought, "Let me commit suicide. What's the use of living now?" Then Lord Chaitanya appeared to him in his unconscious state in a vision and told him, "You've given your body to Krishna. You cannot kill it. It will be a great offense. Now you go to see Gadadhar Prabhu, and he will be able to help you to study the Bhagavata." So then he came conscious, and then he remembered the words of Lord Chaitanya. He asked, "Where is Gadadhar?" And they said, "Well, he's in the Totagopinath temple." So he went to the temple of Totagopinath, and there he asked for Gadadhar. They said, "Gadadhar is in such grief and such separation and love and separation of Lord Chaitanya. He's not speaking to anyone. He's not eating. He's just constantly crying in separation that the Lord has just gone." He said, "No, but I need to see him. Just tell him that I'm come." So they went in and they told Gadadhar that Srinivas has come. He said, "Srinivas, bring him immediately." They were all shocked. He wasn't seeing anyone. He wasn't eating. Even he was feeling such separation, he felt some happiness to see Srinivas. He knew that he was sent by Lord Chaitanya. So Srinivas fell down on the ground offering his obeisances and said, "I want to accept you as a spiritual master. I want to learn from you the Srimad Bhagavatam, the great history of the Bhagavat, the science of God realization." He said, "Well, I can teach you the Bhagavatam, my dear Srinivas. But the problem is that..." And he showed the Bhagavatam. Of course, now we have Bhagavatams which are printed, you know, by big printing presses. But in those days, the Bhagavatams were all written by hand. The pages had been washed away. Now we can't read it anymore. And he looked and he saw the pages were all smeared because of the tear duct. You couldn't really make out what was written anymore. Somehow it had become illegible. So he said, "The only way I can teach you the Bhagavatam is you're going to have to get a new copy for me. So if you get a new copy, then I can teach you." I said, "Where will I get a new copy?" I said, "Well, they make them in Navadvip." where he came from. So then, he went back again to Navadvip, walking all the way. And that was the center of learning. So there are many great scholars there, and they could write in the Bengalis. They copied by hand the entire 18,000 verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which took a bit of time. So the whole operation took a couple months or more in order to go there, walk there, get it all copied. They finally got a whole copy, wrapped it up in a special silk cloth, and then he went with his Bhagavatam palm leaves, walking back again to Jagannath Puri. When he got back to Jagannath Puri, and he was taking a bath in the place where Lord Chaitanya's danda was broken, he was going to head to see a Gadadhar Prabhu. Then he asked for a Gadadhar Prabhu. And there was some kind of a festival going on in the Tota Gopinath temple. And they said, "You don't know? Gadadhar Prabhu has passed away. He left the world in separation of Krishna Chaitanya." "Oh no! 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 I don't believe it! How am I going to learn the Bhagavatam? Who's going to teach me? How will I get a spiritual master? No, how can't be? No," and he's, "Yes, everyone's always going like just in a daze, man, just kind of walking in a stupor. People, what's wrong with this? I finally fell unconscious, crying in a heap somewhere, just completely frustrated. How is he going to find me?" He was so eager to learn. He wanted his only goal in life was just to learn the science of Krishna consciousness, to get the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. So Gadadhar appeared to him in a dream and told him that you go back to Jagannath, to Navadvip, there is Nityananda and the Dwaita. They can help you. But first you meet all the devotees of Jagannath Puri. So then he went and he met all the devotees of Jagannath Puri, Baninath, Bhavananda, different associates of Lord Chaitanya. I don't know if Ramananda Rai was still there, but whoever was there, he met many of them, all of the ones that were still present. Then he took his Bhagavatam, and again he walked back to Navadvip 500 miles. When he got to Navadvip, he took a bath in the Ganges, and he was coming out, and he was asking the people for direction, where to find Lord Nityananda and Advaita. And he said, "You don't know. They just passed away a few days ago. They're no longer present. They went back to the spiritual world." And again, he said, "No, no, no!" I couldn't believe it. Again, for the third time. This time, And he was just like crying, and he was walking down the road in a just totally. Just frustrated. There's no word to describe the separation, the intense desire that he was feeling, and the hopelessness of that moment. Then some Vaishnava came up to him with tilak, nice devotee, and said, "Are you Srinivas?" He said, "Yes." "Please come with me." He said, "Who are you?" And he was like, he said, "Bansidas Babaji, the consort of Lord Chaitanya, Vishnu Priya, Thakur Rani wants to see Lord Chaitanya's widow, who was living in separation of Lord Chaitanya, was residing in Navadvip. So she was calling Srinivas." Srinivas became very excited. "Why? How did you know who I am?" He said, "Don't worry about this. I can recognize you from the description she gave me. But I never met her. It's all right, come." So then He went with Bansidas, and then he came into the house of where Jagannath Mishra's own house, Sachi Mata, had lived there, Lord Chaitanya's childhood house. And there he could see Vishnu Priya. Immediately he fell on the ground and offered her his respectful, prostrate obeisances. And she told him to sit. He could see that she was, her hair was not kept. She was obviously continuously crying. She wasn't, taking care of herself. But still she was effulgent, very beautiful, but totally just unkept because she was in such separation that Lord Chaitanya had left the world and she was feeling such great love for him. She wasn't caring for herself or anything. She was just eating a few grains of food and chanting continuously Lord Chaitanya's name, Hare Krishna mantra. So he said, she explained to him that last night Lord Chaitanya came to me in my dream. He sat down and he took me and said, sit on my lap. And I sat on the Lord's lap. He told me, there's a great devotee of mine coming. He's very dear to me. He's suffering a lot because he wants to achieve a pure spiritual master, but he's not achieved yet. His name is Srinivas. When he comes to Navadvip, and he described what you look like, he says, bring him and tell him to go to Vrindavan. There he will find the Goswamis, Rupa and Sanatana and others, and he can get their shelter. So then he disappeared, Vishnu Priya said. So you are definitely very blessed by Lord Chaitanya. So I wanted to tell you this on the order of my Lord. I'm very glad to be able to see you. You have many services to perform for Lord Chaitanya in the future. Now you should go to Vrindavan, but before you go, you can meet the Vaishnavas here and take their blessing. So then he met the different Vaishnavas in Navadvipa. Srivas Thakur, Ramdas Pandit, different Vaishnavas who were there at the time, Nandanacharya. And then he went off with his Bhagavatam, 1,000 miles, at least 1,000, maybe 12 or 1,500 miles distance to Vrindavan, far northwest of India. He was in the north and the east of India. So after walking for a long time, month, I don't know how long it takes to walk that far, but a month, maybe, I don't know exactly. I think it takes a long time to walk 1,500 miles. 100 days, maybe? 15 miles a day? So at least 3 to 4 months must take. So anyway, finally he got to Vrindavan, the birthplace of Lord Krishna, and he bathed at the sacred Akura bathing pond, where Krishna had bathed before leaving Vrindavan. And he was preparing himself to look for Rupa and Sanatana, the great spiritual masters. And then he overheard two people speaking on the road. Oh, Vrindavan is just not the same without Rupa and Sanatana. Now that they have left, I feel that Vrindavan is empty. What? What are they saying? He jumped out. He went and said, what are you saying? What's happened? Where's Rupa and Sanatana? I looked at him and, well, why are you so excited? What's, you don't know? Right now in Govindaji temple, they're having the final festival. They have just left their bodies last night. No, no, no! He took his Bhagavad and he just ran to the temple. And he asked them, and there was a big festival. He said, no, they're gone. He just couldn't believe it. He fell in the back of the temple in a heap, just unconscious. And someone started putting water on his face and tapping him. And then, Srinivas, are you Srinivas? He said, who are you? He said, I'm Jiva. Please come with me. And so then Jiva Goswami, the younger brother of Rupa and Sanatana, well, the nephew, took him to his ashram and explained that Rupa and Sanatana appeared to me last night in a dream and told me that you would be coming and that I should instruct you the science of Krishna consciousness, and you should take initiation from Gopal Bhakta Goswami, who is far my superior, as your initiating guru. And you will learn the science of the Bhagavatam and be able to preach Krishna consciousness on behalf of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this way, then he met the next day Gopal Bhakta Goswami, and he took shelter from Gopal Bhakta Goswami, and later he took initiation from him. And under Gopal Bhakta's guidance, he studied from Jiva Goswami the Vedas. In this way, after so many trials and trying to find the spirit, but he was always determined. Of course, sometimes he became very hopeless. But then Krishna somehow or another gave him the mercy, and then he went on again to seek until finally he found at great difficulty. So sometimes one has to look in different ways, and eventually one finds a bona fide spiritual master, takes shelter, gets connected with the disciplic succession, and engages in devotional service, engages in the process of bhakti yoga. Like this, there are many histories of great souls who have undergone various trials for ultimately achieving the absolute truth. So, of course, in the previous time, one had to seek out a spiritual master, sometimes very difficult to find. But Prabhupada was very kind. He came all over the world to establish the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya, the Hare Krishna movement, so that people could get connection with the succession or spiritual line of spiritual master, so they, one could easily understand what is the spiritual science. Otherwise, it's very difficult, because everyone has to go to India to know the science of God consciousness. So he very kindly brought it to the rest of the world, to all the continents. This year, Krishna consciousness also was given legal recognition in the Soviet Union. So now the 10,000 people that are chanting Hare Krishna need not fear being arrested anymore for chanting. And the number of chanters will increase, hopefully by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, to millions in that country. So we need to focus on what are our priorities. Who are we? Are we, is this living for the temporary life really the thing we should do, or should we have something balanced where we actually we live to maintain our body and soul together, simple life, without trying to unnecessarily complicate things, and try to give more energy to understanding what is the purpose of life. Who are we? What is God consciousness? What is the eternal happiness that is coming from love of God, coming from within us, coming from love of Krishna. So, thank you again for all being present here tonight to discuss something about King Bharat and his different transmigrations and ultimately his delivering of the world. We discussed the journeys of Srinivas Acharya in trying to find a bona fide spiritual master. And we also discussed the nature of the body, which is coming from earth and going back to earth, and the difference in the nature of the living force in the body, which is actually imperishable, which is a part of Krishna. Therefore, we should go back to our origins, realize our original source, and remain transcendental to the changes of the material world. By nature, everyone is Sat-Chit Ananda. Ishwaraha Paramaha Krishnaha Sat-Chit Ananda Vigraha. We are all eternal and filled with blissful knowledge. That's what we're seeking. We're seeking knowledge of our eternal nature. We're seeking natural bliss from within, happiness that's fully satisfying, and we want eternal knowledge. Knowledge which is not changing from one minute to the next. Something which can give us a real understanding of this world, life, and existence even beyond our experience. We thank you very much for your attention. We hope that you take advantage of reading these books. They contain very many interesting histories. Nothing else, they're very interesting. And they have many important teachings which can be gained. Teachings which are invaluable, which would be very difficult to get anywhere else. Actually, these books are priceless. But there are libraries here, as well as books even in most of the college libraries, and also they're available for purchase if someone wants. But it's very important to understand the different viewpoints coming from the ancient culture of India. In this world, to get a better understanding of the world we live in, why not see from the perspective of the ancient wise sages of India? They have a viewpoint which is so profound, that so universal in its view, that it even solves our modern problems very easily. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna. Any questions? I chant Hare Krishna every day in Red Square.
Jai!
They went chanting there, and then first, after they got legally recognized, and then the police went to stop them, and then the devotee, as I saw a picture, he's talking like this. Now we're legal, this is our belief, we can chant here, this is our practice. And then the police said, now you can practice, you can't chant in Red Square, you have to chant somewhere else. And then the big crowd of people gathered around, and they're saying, why not? Glasnost. Let them chant. And so there's so many people there, then the policemen backed off, and ever since they've been chanting.
Right.
Other questions? Yeah, of course, the spirit soul has quite a good memory, but normally what happens when you change bodies, you forget the process of birth and everything, you forget your previous birth. There are some children, when they can remember their previous lives, there's thousands of case histories of that, but usually when they get over 5 years, they start forgetting. There are very few people that are adults that can remember previous birth. There are many children that can't. I mean, many, not even 1%, but there's many thousands who, there have been case histories of that have been recorded by parapsychologists and other researchers. But in the case of Jarabharat, this was specifically because he had been a yogi. He had been a practicing yogi. If a person practices even a little bit of Krishna consciousness, a little bit of devotional service, then that can save one from the greatest danger. Of course, the greatest danger is forgetfulness. If we have to go into some birth where we forget everything we've done, we start back again from zero, that's very dangerous. The advantage of being able to continue on and grow from where you left off is very important. So he was a bit careless, very careless in fact, to become so attached to the deer. I mean, when the deer would lick his face, he would get affectionate, kiss the deer a little, give a little peck on the nose or something. And he just got a little sentimental with the deer. Instead of being so concentrated just to prepare for going back to Godhead, he just got a little bit sentimental with his pet. And so when he left his body, he had to take birth as a deer, because he was thinking about the deer when he met. But because of all the other spiritual practices and austerities he had performed, he had the blessing not to forget. He didn't forget in the third birth either when he took birth as Jarabharat. So he could remember the whole three births. So this was a special dispensation because he had been such an advanced devotee. In other words, Krishna protects his devotees. He says, Name bhakta pranashati. My devotee will never perish. So he protects the devotee from this type of danger. Gives them chances. Is that all right? Any other question? Harm?
I'm wondering, is this the same part of the land of India, the part of Parshadvaita?
Yes. This whole planet, in other planets, we understand that this planet is known as Bharat Loka, or Bharat Varsha, by the residents of other planets. He was such that this history for them is even is quite amazing. And he was a famous emperor in his time, and then he became liberated through these different stages. So this planet became known after him as Bharat, the planet of King Bharat. The whole planet. Yeah, originally the whole planet. Now India is known as Bharat. But originally, for other residents in other planets, the whole planet is known as Bharat. They don't know it as Earth, they know it as Bharat. Bharat Loka, Bharat planet. Any other question? Yes? Well, there's a book in India that tells you past life, why you got the present body you have. It's an astrological book. Through astrology, one can know why you got the present body and what was your previous body. The point of knowing that is to avoid making the same mistakes. But just to know it, just for some kind of sentimental value, it's not that useful. But it may be interesting to know why you got this particular birth, what karmas you perform. So gentlemen study a little bit about astrology to learn what their previous karmas were, their previous influences, and so that they can be careful to transcend them by practicing the proper yogic practices to transcend the previous karmas. No one can avoid karma unless you practice bhakti yoga. The previous karmas will have their effect unless one is able to transcend them by becoming more spiritual, neutralizing the effects of previous karmas. There's a lot of interest in these type of things, but the people go about half the way. If they would go the complete way, then it would be more beneficial, would actually be useful. It's one thing to know what your previous birth is, but it's more important to know what your next one's going to be. I can know where I've been, but I like to know where I'm going. And that's important, to be able to know that how we can lead our life so that we end up in a better place, at least a better place than we are now. And not in a worse place. For that purpose, that sometimes it's good to know, well, how did I get here? Then we can get a clear idea how the whole laws of karma works. And then we can take necessary precautions so that the next birth we don't duplicate any mistakes you might have made in the past. Huh? Yeah, that's why it's more important to know how to act for the next life. That's what we... Because, of course, you're correct. In the material world, there's a lot of variety that we can choose from. We can think of new mistakes to make. So therefore, for a little train, or for practicing spiritual life, then Krishna says that, because Arjuna asked in the Bhagavad Gita, that, well, what happens if somebody starts to practice some yoga, as you're mentioning, and they practice devotional service, and they do all these activities that you recommend, but then they don't finish up their activities. So they've detached themselves a little bit from material activities, yet they've not fully reached the spiritual goal, they have not reached perfection. So they're like somewhere in between. What's going to happen? Are they going to be like a cloud that just gets destroyed by the wind, left, you know, nothing, just hanging in nowhere? What's going to happen? And then Krishna replied in this regard that no, you don't have to worry about that. That for someone who does auspicious or good activity, spiritual activity, there's never a bad result. Even if someone doesn't finish in the next birth, they'll get a better opportunity. They'll get a better birth. They'll be born in a higher planet, or they'll be born in the family of yogis or of fortunate people, so that they don't have to worry about material things. They can concentrate on their spiritual life. They won't be the loser for having practice, even if they don't finish, even if they still have many material desires. Then those desires will get fulfilled, and then they can later get another opportunity to take up. Many people in the material world here are actually waiting to again come back to practice the spiritual life. They didn't finish up in the previous birth. And when they come in contact with devotees who are practicing with the Krishna conscious movement, they feel some immediate affinity. They feel at home. Maybe George Harrison is one of those people. He said he feels very much at home with Krishna. Doesn't feel that it's anything foreign for him. There are many people that feel that way. So in this way, people can again take up where they left off in the previous life. Anything else? Yes?
I'd like to make an announcement that we have a collection of tapes, lectures by the Divine Grace of the Jaya Patasam, and they're in the store. And we have actually, we have a tray of them over here. And if you have any in the next room, also we have all the books.
And it's a feast tonight, right?
Yeah.
Any drama in this feast?
What?
Here we go.